And I am going to be talking to you about life, death, and the critical transition, and our experience of using model checking in distributed systems. This is joint work with James Anderson and Amin Vedat, as well as Ranjit Jala, who could not be here today. So model checking began about 25 years ago, and it came up with these four guys who came up with these great ideas about using temporal logic with highly formalized systems in order to verify properties about these systems. And they were interested in things like hardware circuits and cache coherence and cryptographic protocols. And they used these techniques to great success to find bugs in these systems. But in terms of our ability to use them for distributed systems, they had some challenges. In particular, you had to define your system in a formal language, which generally meant that there was a disconnect between your definition, your specification, and the actual implementation. And furthermore, these generally only worked over finite state systems. So this was great, it was a good start, and we're ready to move forward. Over the next 15 years or so, there were a bunch of improvements, but the next major improvement came with the introduction of Verisoft and CMC, which were two new systems, which we call software model checkers, that allow you to test unmodified software systems for safety properties. I'll tell you more about safety properties, but just keep in mind that safety properties are more or less assertions. And these two systems let you run systematic exploration in order to find these bugs in your systems. But what we really need is a tool that will allow us to find liveness properties, violations of liveness properties. And that wasn't really possible for unmodified software systems. So that's what I'm going to be talking about today. We have gone forward and implemented techniques to find violations of liveness properties. These liveness properties, we argue, are at least as important, if not more important, than safety properties, because we find them more convenient, more easy, more natural to specify than the corresponding set of safety properties. We start with our implementation of pastry. Pastry, as you know, has this key property that each node is maintaining a successor and a predecessor pointer so that the nodes form a ring. Pastry handles node churn, meaning nodes can leave and arrive whenever they want, and the ring will continue to self-organize. For example, if node A wishes to leave, it simply does so. Nodes B and F will detect its departure and can recorrect the ring after it leaves. Node A can re-arrive later. It will send a join message to somebody in the ring, and it will be routed to its nearest neighbor. This message will then be responded to with another message telling the joining node of its predecessor and its successor. Finally, to join the ring, it will send a message to those two nodes telling them of its arrival, and it will take its place in the ring. This is what's supposed to happen, what you expect will happen when you run pastry in the real world. So we implemented this system, and we made it available to a friend of ours who wanted to do node churn experiments, where this happens. Node A leaves and comes back. He worked on it for a while and said, you know, your system usually works. Most of the time, everything's happy and all the nodes come back and they form rings and I get great results. But every once in a while, when the node tries to come back, it sends a join message, but it's never able to join. The only thing that I can tell you about this execution is what's in the log file, and that is a warning that said, you know, when I tried to do the leaf set maintenance, the leaf set was empty. Unfortunately, this tells us almost nothing about what the bug was, because this just means that A is not joined when its leaf set timer fires. In fact, if A were in a ring by itself, or if it was expected to take a long time to fire, this would be a perfectly normal message for it to have in its log. So it really doesn't help us much at all. So we now have the unenviable task of trying to produce symptoms, trying to figure out what execution might have caused this symptom to occur in the first place. What we really wanted to was to use model checking, to simply take one of these existing tools and give it our implementation and our symptom and have it produce for us an execution that violated this symptom. Or I should say that produced this symptom, that violated our expectations of what should happen. Unfortunately for us, these systems required you to specify your symptoms as safety properties. A safety property is a set of executions satisfying always P, where P is a state predicate. Also, you can think of this as an assertion. We originally thought this would not be a problem. We said, Sure, let's use the safety property, the nodes form a ring. Unfortunately, when we ran the model checker using this safety property, it immediately told us that our system was broken. Because right after the nodes boot, all six nodes are live, but do not contain pointers to each other, and therefore they don't form a ring, a violation of the safety property that nodes must always form a ring. All right, we said, so that's not going to work as a safety property. Maybe what we want is that node pointers are symmetric. Whenever I have a pointer to my successor, he has a pointer to me as a predecessor. This sounds like a safety property. So we ran the model checker with this safety property. But once again, the model checker quickly informed us that this was not true in our system, because when I add the state for my successor, I send him a message to tell him that I'm his predecessor. And in the time between when I set that state and when he receives the message, this is not a valid property. He's actually pointing to someone else in the meanwhile. So this isn't a valid safety property for our system either. We went on to try another one. Maybe it's the case that nodes always have successors. But in fact, this has some of the same temporal problems that the previous properties did. So finally we said, all right, we've got it. Here is a safety property that should allow us to possibly find a case where a node is not able to join the system. This safety property says that if a node is not joined, its join timer should always be scheduled. This would make sense because if the node ever became, if the timer ever became unscheduled and the join procedure failed, it would then not be able to join the system. So this seems like a fine safety property. So we started the model checker with this safety property, and it ran, and it ran, and it ran. The next day, when it was still running, we said, okay, maybe this is not the bug. What we really wanted to do was to find, to use a tool where we could simply say, the nodes should form a ring, and have it tell us the executions. That is to say, we really wanted it to use liveness properties. So liveness properties are a set of executions satisfying always eventually P, where P is a state predicate. We know that this is a bit of a simplification of the definition, but it's sufficient for a large number of liveness properties, and it's what we'll be using for this talk. So now we have the ability to say, at least in theory, eventually the nodes form a ring, and eventually node pointers are symmetric, and eventually nodes have successors. But of course, we couldn't actually do this yet because the model checker didn't support it. We needed to look at the model checker to figure out why it doesn't support it. When we did so, we determined that it had to do with the state space exploration that the model checker does. We start from the initial system state. Imagine here a system with two nodes and a network. The system state is the state of these two nodes and the state of the network. And on the left-hand side, I'm showing pictorially the state space that's been searched so far. So right after these two nodes are booted, one possible event is the initialization application event on node 1. Another possible event is the initialization application event on node 2. Since there's been no network events to happen thus far, and the nodes can't be reset before they're started, these are the only two possible events at this execution length. And after searching these two events for violations of safety properties, it now marks this depth as being searched. Now it considers executions of length 2. After the initialization event on node 1, node 1 might reset. Or maybe node 2's initialization event, which is still pending, might occur. Or maybe node 2 will receive a network message that was sent by node 1 in its initialization step. Similarly, if node 2 was initialized first, there's a set of operations that might have occurred in that circumstance. And now we've completed searching depths of 2. This continues for the next two steps. And what you can see is that the state space needing to be searched is growing exponentially. Now it's clear why we can't find liveness properties using this technique, because the liveness properties that we want to test for don't occur for hundreds of steps. And with an exponential search explosion like this, there's no way that an exhaustive technique would be able to search for these effectively. Viewed another way, the liveness problem is that you do this search in the state space with the unsafe region that the programmer defines using assertions or other safety properties, and you have the liveness region, which are the things that should eventually happen. This model checker starts from this initial system state and explores sort of as far as it can, and it's able to find some safety properties, safety property violations, which users can then fix and improve the system. But for the vast majority of other states, which are not unsafe, it can tell you nothing. If it were to declare these liveness violations, it would be incorrect, because most executions will, in fact, run from these periphery states to the live region. This is what ought to happen, right? As your system normally works, it normally moves all executions reach to the live state. And this is what you want to happen. What you don't want to have happen are your executions that run forever and ever and ever and never reach the live state. At this point, we hypothesize that there's a dead state space. We think that what happened is that in this execution, there was an error that occurred. And as a result of the error, this execution can no longer reach the live state. If there hadn't been an error, we hypothesize that the further along the execution, it would eventually have gotten a stroke of good luck and reached the live state. But because it went on for a very long time, let's call it 80,000 steps, and still didn't reach a live state, we're going to believe that there must have been an error. This is further supported by the fact that if the execution had taken a different route at some space before the error, it could have reached a live state. So the question then is, how do we find these executions that don't reach live states? And the answer is we combine the exploration of existing model checkers with random executions. From every state that we encounter, we're going to do a random execution and run it for long enough to make sure that it will reach a live state. We'll continue doing this exhaustive search, and at every state that we encounter, we will run random executions to make sure that they reach live states. Eventually, we may come across an execution that does not reach a live state, even though we've given it a very long time to do so, 80,000 steps, which generated a 2 gigabyte log file that the programmer now has to look through to figure out why exactly it didn't reach a live state. After trying to do this a couple of times, we realized that this was a very unfun task. And so we set out to develop a new technique that would help us to zoom in on the actual bug. We realized that we could use additional random executions along the original violating execution to search for the bug. We start near the beginning of the execution and do an additional random walk by branching off at some point. If this random walk reaches a live state, we know that the execution to the point where we branched off had not yet reached a dead state. Because if it had reached a dead state, it would not have been possible for any execution through this state to reach the live states. We do additional executions, increasing the prefix length each time by doubling, in order to find a bound, a lower bound, which we know the execution is not dead, and an upper bound where we believe that it is dead. Once we've found a prefix length that we believe to be dead, we run some number of additional executions to convince ourselves that it's not just bad luck, that it actually is a dead state. And having done so, we mark this state space dead. And at this point, we conduct a binary search to figure out where exactly the system entered the dead state. So we do additional random walks. And as we do these, we grow the state space of the dead state. And we continue doing these executions to pinpoint the precise execution, the precise transition, where before the transition, the system could have followed a different path to reach a live state. But that after this transition, no matter what the system does, despite our many efforts to make it do otherwise, it cannot reach a live state. We've found that this critical transition is invaluable in finding the actual bug that's causing your system not to reach a live state. We took this technique and we applied it to the pastry bug that we had been told about before. First, you need to also realize that pastry nodes maintain state pointers. These state pointers are for efficient routing. And the bug we'll see is due to an inconsistent global state of some of these pointers. The model checker, when run on this pastry system, generated this violating execution, which in step 5 has a critical transition. First, node D sends a message to node F, telling it about the presence of node A. Node A then departs, and the ring corrects itself. Now, in step 4, node A resumes its operation. It's now listening for network connections, is ready to rejoin the ring, but hasn't actually started the process yet. At this point in step 5, the critical transition, node F receives the message from node D, telling it about node A, and updates some of its routing state to point to node A. Now, when node A tries to join, its message is routed through node D to node F, who then, because of the incorrect routing state, routes this message back to node A. At this point, node A is now, the system is now in a dead state. Node A cannot join the ring, meaning the system will never reach its live state that all nodes are in a ring. And the critical transition that node F has received a message telling it about a node that is not in the ring and has updated its routing state as a result helps you figure out where exactly the bug is and what you need to do to solve the problem. This bug was sufficiently complicated that we tried to look around and see if other pastry implementations also suffered this problem. We went to the free pastry website, the Canonical implementation, and found in their README this description of a bug that they had found in version 1.4.2 of their code. We were sufficiently convinced that this bug was not limited to our implementation and that we were in fact finding bugs that other people had put in their code as well. So to recap, before I go on to talk about our implementation of the model checker, there's liveness and there's safety. With liveness, you know the expected behavior of your system. You know, that is, the correct behavior that it should eventually do, and you can succinctly capture this through a small number of properties. For example, with a tree, the liveness property is the nodes form a spanning tree always eventually. With a ring, the liveness property is all of the nodes eventually form a ring. And you can define additional liveness properties based on what it is that your system is doing. If your system is tasked with sending messages from one node to another node, the liveness property would be that however many messages the simulated application will send, will be received by the destination node. Now, on the other hand, with safety properties, you're checking for specific errors. These are things that you have suspected may be wrong, that your system might do incorrectly, and that might lead to a problem to prevent it from doing what it's supposed to do. But to specify the correct behavior of your system using these safety properties is sort of hopelessly complex because there are hundreds of things that your system could do wrong that would prevent it from reaching a live state. And so you need advanced knowledge of all possible error conditions in order to capture your system using safety properties, whereas with liveness properties, you don't need any a priori knowledge of the specific errors your system might commit. So MaceMC finds executions that violate liveness conditions, and we identify the dead states and the critical transition. So in order to use your system in the model checker, we've implemented it over Mace. Mace is a language that we use for defining event state systems, and it's particularly convenient for joining with the model checker, because the first thing that you have to do with the model checker is to break your system into a set of atomic events and the transitions that transition from one to another, and you have to define the interface so that the model checker knows what possible events it can explore. So this is a diagram of how you might set up your system in Mace. You define its states, you define the types of events that might occur, network events, timer events, and application events, and you specify how the system transitions, each of these transitions being an atomic transition. You then have this two-node system communicating over TCP and UDP, and you're going to put it inside the MaceMC simulator, where we replace the TCP and UDP services with a network simulator. We replace the timers with a timer scheduler simulator, and we replace the application with a simulated application simulator, which the user writes. There's a long list of other implementation details you have to worry about. These are mentioned in the paper, but for now I won't go into these. We used MaceMC to find bugs in four implementations of our own, and we found a total of 52 bugs, most of which were liveness bugs, or at least the majority. More about these bugs can be found in the paper, but we're pretty happy with the results. So now I'm going to tell you a little bit about what we've learned from using the system. So the first thing that we learned is that you can learn new safety properties by finding violations of liveness properties. That is to say, if your system enters a dead state, there's probably, in some cases at least, something that characterizes this dead state that is succinctly described as a safety property. For example, consider cord, where each node maintains a successor pointer. The liveness property, quite simply, is that if you follow the successor pointer from every node, it should reach all other nodes. However, another detail of the implementation is that each node also maintains a predecessor pointer. In this case, I've shown a bug where node B is maintaining a predecessor pointer that points to itself, despite the fact that it should point to the node C. This is a bug that actually occurred in our system. Later, when node A tries to join, it sends a join message to node B, who, because of its incorrect predecessor pointer, routes a message back to A, and A updates its successor pointer. But B doesn't update any of its own state, and now the liveness property, the one that said that all the nodes had to be in a ring, is now being violated. The safety property that we learn from this is that if a node's predecessor pointer points to itself, its successor pointer must also point to itself. It makes perfect sense once you know that it's a possible bug. The problem is knowing that it's a possible bug. And unless you've spent a really long time looking at your code beforehand, you probably wouldn't have realized this. Of course, not all bugs will be so easy to express through safety properties. Some are very complicated, involving the state of the network as well as the state of multiple nodes. And for these, we find it more simple just to use the liveness property from the start. We've also realized that this leads to an attractive way to do model checking, which is to start with liveness properties and add the safety properties as you go along. One of the nice things about using safety properties is that when they find a violation, you generally are left with a much shorter execution in which to find the bug. So the other types of things that we learned were the kinds of bugs that our distributed systems were prone to. And most of these had to do with hard-to-test code that our model checkers particularly good at testing. So for example, in this case, we're dealing with a tree, and node B is trying to join the tree under node A. Node A, however, is going to receive this join message after it boots, but before it initializes. At this point, it's still listening and ready for network connections, but it's not ready to process any of the messages. So it's going to ignore this message. B, however, is waiting for a response, and it will continue to do so indefinitely because the socket that it used to send this message to node A did not exhibit any errors, and it was using the TCP socket errors to identify the likelihood that A did not exist. Because of this incorrect hard-to-test bug, we realize this general problem that we've had to implement in several systems, which is whenever you receive messages but you're not ready and they're necessary for the correctness of your system, you need to stick them in a deferral queue. And this deferral queue lets you process them when you eventually become initialized. As another example, UDP messages, which become reordered in the network, also cause problems in our systems. In this case, we're dealing with a user-level transport protocol that tries to provide many of the same functionality that TCP does. Node 2 is going to send a send message to node A is going to send a send message to node B with sequence number 2 in order for its communication channel. But before node B receives this message, node A times out and sends it a new message with sequence number 9 that node B sticks in its state. Later, when node B receives the sequence number with sequence number 2, it updates its state, and because of the bug, the fact that there's no way to recover from this, these two nodes can no longer communicate, because one will send messages with one sequence number, and the other will be expecting the other sequence number. The simple solution that we realized in this case is to use monotonic sequence numbers that identify the connection state as well as the sequence number. By using a monotonic sequence number, node B can tell that the message with send number 2 is an old message and should be discarded because it has already received the message with sequence number 9. More surprisingly, though, is that this same problem occurs even when you're using TCP. Because if you're using overlays where you might route messages through intermediate third parties, the messages might be reordered between the parties, even though you're using reliable in-order communication channels. In this case, node A is in a tree. It's a child of node B. And it has learned of a new node, C, that it wants to join under. So it sends node B a reset message, followed by sending node C a join message. Node C is going to send this message, forward it to B, because of whatever the protocol said to do. Node B, receiving this message, says, well, node A is already a child of mine. I don't have to do anything for this message. Then later, when it receives the reset message, it removes its state for node A, who's still waiting for a response. Once again, the same solution, using monotonic sequence numbers to distinguish old messages from new ones, will solve this problem. So in summary, MaceMC is the first software model checker capable of testing liveness properties. And as I've argued, liveness properties are at least as important, if not more important, than safety properties for distributed systems. And they're certainly more natural to define and to test for. You could find out more information about our project at that website. And at this point, I will take questions. Thank you.
Ken Berman, Cornell. I'm interested in a scalability question.
I didn't catch the beginning of that.
I'm interested in a scalability question. As systems get very large, they can exhibit behaviors which you would never see on a small scale. But if I take your approach, it strikes me that as take these examples with cord and ringness, or pastry and ringness, as those systems get large, on expectation, they aren't rings. Because as they get large, you would expect that there's always someone joining or always someone leaving. And so it's not obvious to me that it's possible to specify a liveness property that might let me study whatever it is I really want to study. Obviously, I could with your five-node examples, but those are kind of easy cases.
Right. So the liveness properties that we are currently suggesting people write are based on sort of this common idea that things will eventually resolve themselves as long as things like node churn stop happening. So what we've focused on thus far is handling those cases where eventually there's no more churn and you want to make sure that the eventual property does occur.
But there are
yes, there
widely
are definitely
known systems. For example, you know, have been file systems suggested over DHTs which probably churn continuously on a large scale because they never have enough time to catch up before
right.
the next event that forces them to move. And that type of thing, it seems to me, it strikes me that you might be close to being able to tackle it, but you'd have to move away from it to more of a sort of a state sampling approach. Have you thought about that?
Not a lot. Some, a little. We certainly are aware of the possibility that some systems are expected to churn continuously. And as a result of that, it may be hard to define liveness properties. And what you see in these cases is that the violations of these liveness properties are ones that don't actually enter a dead state. If your liveness property is, for example, that periodically something happens, you may not actually enter a dead state because node churn later will change the way your system is working. And what we can sometimes do in this case is to find executions that violate your ideal liveness properties, but it's much harder to find the critical transition because if there's no dead state, we wouldn't be able to find the specific bug. So we still have work to do in that area.
Hi, Mark Cherini, Tufts University. Figuring out whether you've reached dead space, it seems like it's a reformulation of the halting problem. So do you have to just set that experimentally in your model checker?
You do. So we did some testing to figure out what's a reasonable bound. And it is definitely different for each system. And you won't actually know this until you're using your system. But for example, this shows the simulator steps. Let me set this up. We ran the system for some number of nodes, like 3, that we were testing on. And then we ran a bounded execution to the depth 15 and ran all states to an execution until they reached a live state. And so this is a CDF showing when they reached a live state. So in this case, all the executions reached a live state well before 10,000 steps. And so using a bound like 80,000 was reasonable in this case, but it's definitely a heuristic, and it's definitely something you have to set experimentally.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.